Hello. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts insists on playing even though he's on the pup list. That's Lenny. It's September. It's week one. Football's upon us, almost. And I could not be more excited for the guest I have today. You know the expression, somebody wears a lot of hats? Well, this is a guy who wears a lot of jackets.
Oh, wow. I'm not a hat guy by any means.
It's Kevin Clark.
I've tried hats in my day.
From the Ringer. Me too. I can't do hats. No. I do baseball caps, but I cannot pull off a fedora or a pork pie or...
I have a physically large head, which in like a regular store is a problem.
I think I have a large head too. I've never gotten it measured, but fitted caps are always a little bit too snug on me.
Me too.
Kevin Clark from TheRinger.com, The Ringer NFL podcast. Is Slow News Day coming back?
Yeah, next week.
Next week?
Next week.
The people want to know. Do you have a new jacket in store?
I have many new jackets, yes.
Oh my God. I can't wait.
I spent the last 8 months looking for new jackets.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
You gonna mix it up with some bombers, some Nehru collars?
Got some bombers. Yeah, it'll be, we'll have a lot of football takes and all that, but we will have the appropriate jacket allotment.
Wow.
You only need 17 for the season, because it's just one episode a week.
Oh boy.
I kinda
wanna come back.
You can
not to invite myself, but.
Yeah, I mean, you're welcome to come back.
Oh wow.
That can be the trade here. You were on the first episode of the playoffs last year. We had a great time. We were on a roof.
Yeah, that was great. I wore one of my nicest jackets, I remember, very distinctly.
I remember.
Laying it out the night before in advance of your podcast. So you and I talked about this episode, and we were stoked because finally there's football to talk about. And,
right.
And week one is like an incredible slate of games.
Yeah.
So we were planning on talking about four of them. And then Saturday morning, the Jadeveon Clowney trade happened. So then I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe we'll talk about three games. Then... hours later, the Laremy Tunsil trade happens. So we're down to a couple games that I want to talk about in the second half of this episode that I'm very excited about. But I also just really want to get your thoughts on these trades and these teams, which it's exciting because not only was an absolutely insane weekend and are these trades are mammoth, but they also involve teams that are playoff contenders. In terms of Seattle and, of course, Miami.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. In Houston. And so I think there's like ramifications beyond just looking back at the trades and analyzing value.
So the Laremy Tunsil trade makes sense if this is the last season of football. And that's it. Okay. So essentially they mortgaged their future. I thought it was interesting. Steve Palazzolo made this tweet the other day. It's basically they've secured three linemen with five, picks in the first round or the second round. The Texans. Okay, because they have Titus Howard, Tunsil, and Max. Right. So they've basically overreacted to the we have to protect Deshaun Watson narrative. Like, you had to do that.
Yes.
But not like this. You don't have to just ruin your franchise.
Like
not 2020, not 2021. And so it is, I understand what they were doing.
Right.
But some of their concepts of value were just so... strange to me. You know, the whole day to me reminds me, like, I always go back to Moneyball, which I think is one of the best sports books ever written. And there's a line in there from Billy Beane where he says, if you have to do something, you're screwed. The Texans operated from sunup to sundown on that day as if they had to do something, and surprise, they were screwed.
It's interesting to think about also after this preseason, maybe, you know, there's a little bit of a reaction to how good Andre Dillard looked for Philadelphia as he's another backup left tackle. But imagine if Houston gets him in the draft, if they don't get jumped by Philly, we're looking at an entirely different league, really.
So, yeah. And so that is that the sliding doors moment of 2019?
Okay. So the sliding doors of all of this can be traced back to Dwayne Brown and Bob McNair.
Yeah.
Really, if you want to go all the way back on and how all of this happened in the NFL, like the 30 for 30 on this, what if I told you, it begins in, 2017, right? With Dwayne Brown, the Houston Texans left tackle, basically forcing his way out of Houston.
The Seth Wickersham report,
to Seattle.
By the way.
It was
the beginning of the Bob McNair.
It really was. So much power our friend Seth has. But when you think about it, Kevin, so for those who don't remember how that all played out, Dwayne, who was 31 or 32 at the time, was holding out. He comes back. I don't know if you remember that. He came back because I think he had to come back by week. He was one of those. And the report breaks, and then Dwayne like goes on the record. He is not down with the comments. For those who've forgotten the Seth Wickersham report, it was amidst all of the Kaepernick stuff still was very much going on, and there was this report about the inmates and the, we don't have to relitigate all of it, but Dwayne Brown was not happy. Days later, traded to Seattle.
Yeah.
For, let's see, it was a second and a third, I want to say. They traded a third and a fifth or something, but there was a second involved. Then, flash forward to now, Jevin Clowney, who's very much in the driver's seat this entire time, decides, I want to go to Seattle. Which matters when we're talking about the value of this trade and how why it played.
Oh, for sure.
And
because he would not sign his tender any place that he didn't want to go.
Exactly.
He had basically full power. He's like one of these baseball players that had a list of teams they would go to.
Look, let's pause there before we get back to this trade and talk about why this doesn't happen more often, or if it might happen more often. Because what you're describing, this notion of, okay, a star plays 26, he's a star, he is entering the, it would be, he was playing on his fifth year option last year, right? So,
entering his franchise year.
His franchise year. And he's saying, you know what? I'm not going to sign the tender. I'm going to choose where I want to go. Explain why this doesn't happen more often.
So, it's because the Texans actually bungled it on the front end. The value they could have maximized is trading him before he was ineligible to sign an extension. At this point, Jadeveon Clowney cannot sign an extension.
Right.
He's past the deadline. If you trade him around the draft, he can sign an extension with any team. That's what happened to Dee Ford, for instance. That's what happened to Frank Clark,
yes.
And so,
who had not signed his
who had
tenure
not signed
either.
His tenure, but instead he got a ton of money from the Chiefs.
Right.
So if you wanted to maximize the value for Clowney, you trade him in April, he would get a long-term deal from whoever, and it, whether that's the Dolphins or somebody else, right? Some lesser team. But the Texans had bungled it so much that they could only, he basically wouldn't sign his tender. He became a one-year rental for anybody.
Right.
There is no situation in which he was not basically a six-month rental. And that killed their value. And then he basically said, okay, I'm just going to go to these teams and I won't sign my franchise tender because they cannot entice him with further money.
Exactly. And enticing is the key word, right? Because,
right.
You know, I don't know if Frank Clark wanted to go to Kansas City, but hey, knowing that he's going to get over $100 million certainly changes the scope of the teams they're willing to go to.
I'm available to move to Kansas City for $100 million.
So Jadeveon Clowney, as Kevin just explained, he's looking at this year and he's saying, all right.
I can't make
any
money.
I'm not getting paid.
I cannot
make
any more money.
I'm thinking I'm not going to spend this year in Miami. I'm thinking I'm going to spend it with my buddy, Dwayne Brown, the assistant GM of the Seattle Seahawks. Dwayne Brown, I tweeted this between saying in the offseason that Seattle should pass more and luring Jadeveon to Seattle is just having an all-time offseason.
Who has more power in the organization, Schottenheimer or Dwayne Brown?
I hope it's Dwayne Brown.
I want to talk about the Dillard thing because I think that I understand what you're saying about that being the sliding doors thing, but the Eagles leapfrogged the Texans to get them. And the story of football is that smart teams beat dumb teams. And I think that that just shows you they're just getting – teams like the Texans get owned at every corner by teams like the Eagles and the Patriots. And that's just another example of this. Like, they were just going to sit around and wait for Andre Dillard. I mean, who the hell knows what they would have done if they had that pick.
Right.
But I just think that – That sums up the NFL so well is that the Eagles went out and got their guy and everything is fine for them. The Texans waited, failed, didn't get Andre Dillard, and now have had to throw unbelievable resources at fixing an offensive line.
Which we'll get to in a second. The Dillard thing is interesting to me, Kevin, by the way, because you look at how much Miami got for Tunsil and you gotta think like, Philadelphia got some offers for because they're so deep at offensive. Both of their lines are deep. Your boss, Bill Simmons, made fun of that with the Eagles. When I went on his podcast, we were talking about why people like the Eagles. And he was saying everyone keeps saying it's like the lines and the deepness, the depth and whatnot. But it's very true with that team. And you got to think, OK, here's a team that had a ton of depth, probably could have traded him or one of their various other linemen.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't because they want to hold on to their depth and they're working on a very different timeline from Houston and these other teams.
They're also going to like win the Super Bowl again in the next
right,
3 years. So
it's
Howie Roseman is an incredible GM. And one of the things I noticed in watching Chip Kelly get owned by the University of Cincinnati last week is I think no one's, I don't know if anyone from a football executive standpoint has ever had a better 4 years than Chip Kelly, than Howie Roseman from the moment he got demoted. Cause he spent a year going around to smart people like Steve Kerr and being like, teach me about sports. And then when he got back, he just went on a heater And now he continues to build basically perennially the best roster in football. It's amazing.
Well, let's look at what John...
The anti-Bill O'Brien.
Let's look at what John Schneider did.
Oh, boy.
This offseason. I love John Schneider. I rarely do this on my podcast. But and by this, I mean go full Homer. And I don't... You're going to agree with everything I'm about to say. So it's not a Homer take. It's just the accurate take on the Seahawks offseason.
What a thing to say, is you're about to agree with everything I'm going to say.
All right, yeah, let's hear this. Okay, so just to kind of recap how this all went down and the exchange of picks, I mean, going into the 2019 draft, Seattle had 4 draft picks. Okay. So then they trade Frank Clark, as we mentioned, mm-hmm. in time for him to get a long-term extension once they still had optionality. They swap thirds with Kansas City, but they get a first-rounder and a 2020 second rounder. And then they do a ton of trades during the draft. I think they ended up with like 300 draft picks by the time it was all over.
He's a new Sashi Brown.
Okay, so that happened. So they turned that into LJ Collier, mm-hmm. who may or may not be available for week 1. And then they take DK Metcalf, I think, with the second mm-hmm. pick. They trade up, but whatever. Okay, so then Clowney, they send them Barkevious Mingo, who was going to be cut. Jacob Martin.
And was bad. Mingo, bad and about to be cut.
About to be cut. Jacob Martin, who was a 6th-round pick, who had his upside as a pass rusher.
Sure.
I sat behind him on a plane to Seattle. He had his dog with him, which gives him major points in my book. But, yeah, I'll trade him for Jadeveon Clowney. And a third, which obviously has been discussed ad nauseum. If Clowney walks after this year, they'll get a third. And Seattle's a team that's probably not going to be super active in free agency. They could mm-hmm. actually get that third, right? And there's this part, as part of the agreement, they apparently said they wouldn't franchise him, which fine. I think it's the other two options more likely that they would either let him walk or sign him to a long-term deal, which is not outside the realm of possibility with Jadeveon in Seattle.
Right.
Kind of depends on how they look at Jaron Reed, who's also going to be a free agent. So basically, they traded Frank Clark, Jacob Martin, Barkevious Mingo, and a third for Jadeveon Clowney, LJ Collier, and a second, and got $3 million because they got Houston to pay for half
$7 million
of Jadeveon Clowney.
To sweeten the deal. Just in case Seattle didn't want to trade 2 backup linebackers, they had to throw in some cash. This is an embarrassing trade for the Texans.
And so
Bill O'Brien comes out and says, well, this was well thought. I don't know if you saw his quotes. They were very like, doth protest too much. It was like, we've thought about it so much. We couldn't stop thinking about how well thought out this trade was. And I don't see any evidence that it was well thought out.
I think this is, by the way, way worse than the Tunsil thing. Because the Tunsil thing you can at least defend, even though we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. And that's,
no, but there's a defense for it.
Yeah. I completely agree.
There's
with
no
you.
Defense for this.
I think part of it is the Andrew Luck thing. I think the part of it's
yes.
like, we just saw.
Yes.
A sure thing, retire at 29 because you couldn't protect him.
And an opening in the
can.
Season
right.
for playoff contention. It's right. why, you know, whatever.
Right. There's a sliding doors thing with Andrew Luck, for sure. But I think that what's funny to me is there was a lot of talk about how all in the Texans are for 2019 or whatever. But, I mean, I feel like that would include having Jadeveon Clowney instead of not having Jadeveon Clowney.
Well,
like that would help them in 2019. Everyone's talking about how they're maximizing 2019.
Right.
Well, you just lost one of your best players for no reason.
Okay, well, yeah, let's talk about that because I think it is debatable whether or not Houston is better now.
I think, by the way,
Kenny Stills, a great number 2 or 3
sure,
wide receiver.
Sure,
sure. No joke. Seattle would certainly love to have him.
Fuller, you know, there's
always injuries.
There, yeah.
Keith Cutie's banged up. So with DeAndre, who gets doubled a lot, there's a lot of opportunity there. No doubt Houston's offense is going to be better this season. Now, it's debatable, I think, how fixed the line is. They really like what they saw out of Tytus Howard. They're moving him in to guard the rookie. I think having him next to Tunsil is great for a rookie mm-hmm. guard, especially one who's changed positions. But no question, they're at least better.
Well, I also think we've turned, in the last 48 hours in defense of the trade, we've turned Tunsil into Walter Jones.
Can we talk about this?
Yeah. He's not like...
He's good.
He's not like flying into Canton as soon as he retires.
Well, he's also going to get paid quarterback money because
they
did the trade without agreeing to a long-term contract.
They have to give him a ton of money because they mortgaged their franchise in order to have him.
Just from a football perspective, the offense is better. I think people are underweighting how much worse this defense just got. Because, first of all, the secondary has a million questions, mm-hmm. This Houston secondary. We're talking about the Houston defense. And J.J. Watt, who, yes, before Jadeveon Clowney ever arrived on the scene is when he had his 20 zillion sack season. I think it was 20 and a half.
Probably not 20 zillion.
But Jadeveon Clowney got doubled more than J.J. Watt last year.
One of the best run defenders in football.
Unquestionably.
Which Pete just loves. Every football guy in the world saw that Jadeveon Clowney is the best run defender in football and decided they should just sell out to get him.
I think there's this, we talk about Houston in this trade, and we'll talk again with the Tunsil thing. We talk about them being all in, but that's really undermined by what they're losing in not having Clowney this year. And by the way, there's also the counter argument to the trade. Well, why didn't they just keep Clowney and have him play out the year? It's possible he would have put a Le'Veon Bell, right? And just
having
not signed his tender.
I want to parse this because we've been talking about all in for like 3 years. It's very possible to go all in and still lose. Like, you can go all in on a pair of nines. That doesn't mean, you know, the Chiefs are going, or the Rams went all in on a pretty good hand. The Texans are doing it and there's no guarantee they're even going to win the division.
Okay.
Clowney. I think they will, but it's not. They're not going to fly towards, you know, the Super Bowl here.
So Houston last year, outside of Watt, Clowney, and Whitney Mercilus had 4 sacks, and they asked him to play a different role. Yeah. He was dropping into coverage more. I'm sure he'll contribute more this year. Everyone else on the team combined for 3 sacks and 5 quarterback hits. Like, there's no guarantee that this pass rush is going to be what it was. Without him.
It's unbelievable.
Setting aside the run defense, which was obviously very good last year with him and will obviously take a hit.
This is a very long way of saying teams should have a general manager.
Yes, I think so. I think
that this has been a nice, and the GM lobby of America is really happy about the last week for the Texans.
Everybody keeps saying, well, okay, Bill Bryan, his job's in the line. That's why he's making these moves. He's, again, all in. Yeah, right. Well, setting aside, that's an obvious reason why you don't want a single power structure or whatever. Again, I am not sure that all of these moves add up to a better outcome in the short, forget the long term, which they obviously don't, in the short term either. Like, I think people are underweighting the loss of Clowney on that defense. Meanwhile, in Seattle, once Jaron Reed returns, I get to do this, like, this is this week. I am not doing this again. Okay, so you've got Reed. Yeah. You've got the god, Puna Ford.
Puna Ford, yeah.
Ziggy Ansah is apparently playing week one. Clowney. Okay, I was about to do the linebackers. When the trade was first reported, I was convinced they were going to have to give out, like, Michael Kendricks.
Yeah, Bobby Wagner.
I was like, okay, Michael Kendricks, great.
It's 2 linebackers.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was texting my friend who's a Texan reporter. I was like, Kendricks, right? And
No.
So then KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, Michael Kendricks. Seahawks have, I think, next to Houston, probably the best linebacking group in the NFL.
The funny side effect is they have to keep Mingo on the roster the whole year. Because they can't just be like, oh, we're going to cut this guy immediately. He's going to suck the entire season. And they're going to have to, like, play him for 400 snaps just to justify this trade.
How much does this change how you regard the Seahawks going into the season?
Well, I thought, so my colleague Robert Mays and I did a podcast on Friday in which we listed the teams that could win the Super Bowl. So we do every year. And I'm of the theory that you just throw in everybody with an elite quarterback because, and this started with the Saints 2 years ago because I said they could win the Super Bowl when they popped and Mays said they couldn't. And so I said, listen, they're in my Saints category this year where they've got an elite quarterback. All it takes is a couple of draft picks to hit and all of a sudden you can win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So I already thought, unlike my colleague, that they could win the Super Bowl. My colleague has come around. He now thinks they can win the Super Bowl.
But there's still audio out there of him trashing the team.
That will be resurfaced over and over and over again by me and others. And so, I feel like if you have a good coach, and I consider Pete Carroll a good coach, if you have a good quarterback, everything comes down to whether or not you get a couple of breaks, whether or not the draft class performs, and whether or not, you know, you get a couple of guys either on rookie contracts or bargain basement deals who play way, way above their value.
I think it's funny. I did a pod last night with my friend Kevin Pelton, and he would ask me for a record prediction, and I was like, I'm looking at maybe 10-6, 9-7 before I was 8-8. But it's not like I think Clowney himself is worth 2 wins as a player. But there's a butterfly effect when you throw I said butterfly effect. That might be the wrong terminology. There's an effect when you throw some sort of effect. Someone can explain it to me. Some sort of scientific effect when you throw in a player like that, because not only was Seattle sorely lacking in pass rush, which everyone knew about, the secondary is full of question marks. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely. I mean, this was a defense that was honestly going to be bad, especially with Reed out the first six games. So now you've got Clowney. And they're going to use him as a 4-3 defensive end. So he actually yesterday they were asking him kind of about his usage, and he was talking about how he was excited about being moved around. And frankly, based on his description, it sounded a lot like the Michael Bennett role, where you push him, you have him, you know, setting the edge and defending the run on early downs, and then move him inside where he's actually better statistically at rushing the passer. And it just makes too much sense, right? And then once you have him there, especially when Reed comes back with Anza, it's going to help that secondary that really is not great out a ton. So I think they go from being a bad defense with average upside to being a average defense with good upside right now, plus Russell Wilson. That's where I stand.
Yeah, I think they've got a good shot at the playoffs, honestly.
Yeah.
I think the NFC has a lot more good teams in the AFC. So I think it comes down to a couple of things, that, you know, health and then getting lucky late in season, some schedule wins or whatever. But I think that the Seahawks can be really good.
How do you feel about Houston? So after we just talked about, like, you know, this idea that people are underrating Clowney's loss on the defense.
And a little bit overrating Tunsil.
Yeah.
I think Tunsil's a good player, but I would not have given up a first for him, let alone two firsts. But that's neither here nor there. I think Deshaun Watson's a really good quarterback. I think they have, it reminds me actually a little bit of Seattle in the sense that they have a handful, you know, count on one hand amount of elite players. And then they've got question marks in a lot of other places. And they've got health questions and all that. So I think they win the division by default. I think Indianapolis probably has the best 53-man roster, but they have a quarterback who has just been thrown into a starting spot a week before the season started. So I think that I would peg them as Houston as AFC South winners, but I'm not 100% confident on it. It's a bad year to go all in. I don't think they're better than Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think the AFC pecking order goes New England and Kansas City. And then I would put
Long drop, in my opinion, after that, you've got
the Browns, you've got the Texans, you've got, I would still put the Colts. I mean, the Colts have a lot of roster talent.
The AFC South is absolutely wide open. You could literally, every possible permutation of those teams is, like, at this point on the table.
The Titans went into week 17 with a playoff spot on the line. Okay.
That's like the running joke on the show. Like, the Titans always have 9 wins and nobody knows how it happened. Like,
and everyone forgets.
People
forget that the Titans could have made the playoffs last year. And that's just kind of.
Yeah. This Texans offense, has a lot of talent. By the way, I really like the Duke Johnson addition. They have been so bad at, their short passing game has been awful in Houston. They have been so bad at passing it to running backs, but he is by far the best pass catching back they've ever had. He's actually a very efficient runner as well. I don't know how that's all going to shake out and how they're going to use him, but I'm not convinced that, it's very terrible that Lamar Miller was lost to injury, but he was not an efficient running back last year at all. I think my bigger question there on the offense is just Bill O'Brien, quite frankly.
I at this point, I don't trust Bill O'Brien to make any rational decision. he has shown that we should not trust him to do anything right. So I don't exactly think he's going to have a flawless coaching season or in week 4 he's not just going to randomly trade J.J. Watt for like Vic Beasley or something. Like, just shake it up.
There's an interview today in GQ with DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, I don't know if you saw that. And he mentioned going to Seattle and how well. And I was like, Schneider, put in the call.
He's going. I just
send Dwayne Brown, assistant GM.
I said this on our pod yesterday, but I just want call logs and transcripts from the 30 minutes after those trades, just to see, like, did Belichick ask for DeAndre Hopkins for, like, a fourth? Like, you have to make the call. You have to be like, the Texans are on tilt right now. They will just accept anything. It reminds me, there's a Simpsons episode where They think Mr. Burns is giving away money. People are just running into his office trying to get it.
Yeah,
Hans Molman does it. It reminds me a bit of that. It's like the Texans are just on one right now. Let's just get whatever we can
get. Mr. Burns is such an NFL owner, by the way. Like, how did they never give him an NFL team? Because that would have been a really spot on episode. Okay, so the Texans, and I guess I want to just stay on here a little bit in their prospects. The reason why Bill O'Brien is my concern, because I think, as we've been discussing,
we're
talking about Bill O'Brien as a coach, and we're talking about this, the football stuff. We're setting aside value in the trades and everything that happened to this point.
Right.
This roster going into this season. Deshaun Watson comes in as a rookie. Bill O'Brien completely changes the offense on the fly. It's wonderful. Last year, when Deshaun Watson comes back, I found their offense immensely frustrating. I felt like Bill O'Brien coached the team like they had a great defense and a great running game, and and he was overly conservative. And my concern is going this season that they have a okay defense with a lot of concerns, as we've been discussing, and a lot of weapons on offense and an improved offensive line. I would like to see his scheme reflect that reality, and I'm worried that it won't.
So I feel like there's a red flag anytime an improvement would be the quarterback can fly to every road game instead of take a bus because he's so banged up. I feel like that's always a problem. So I think that Deshaun Watson being banged up needs to be reflected in the scheme. I think that there were probably a lot of kind of false starts and stops and starts with how that offense came along because Deshaun Watson was so freaking banged up.
Yeah.
I think the line should help. I mean, this is a guy, Deshaun Watson had a historically good touchdown rate for the six or seven games that he played in 2017. That 2017 was just, what a moment for six game stretches. We had Garoppolo.
Yeah.
We had Deshaun Watson. We really had some great
shining moments. Deshaun Watson was awesome in the final half of last season,
too.
Yeah,
no, I still think he's really good. I think he's probably a top 10 quarterback. I don't know. I haven't done the rankings lately, but I think that they have a chance to be, 11 or 12 wins. I think the line will help. I don't think you necessarily needed Laremy Tunsil in this. I don't think you needed, two first round picks for Laremy Tunsil. I think you just needed an adult. Like, Julian Davenport gave up some of the most pressures in football last year. Just get him off the team.
I think that's what's so frustrating about this Texans team is going into this offseason, they had a ton of cap space.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do any of this. They could have gotten, I know they were in the mix for Roger Saffold, but, there weren't a ton of free agent offensive linemen.
They could have swung a trade in April. I mean,
things could have been done earlier to get a league average offensive line. And look,
it's like they forgot the season started.
There's a lot of
it's like, oh wait, it's next week.
We've talked about on this podcast that PFF study about how quarterbacks are responsible for a lot of their sacks, and I think that's true. But I think just because you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson who runs around and occasionally takes unnecessary sacks does not mean you should not invest in your offensive line, right? Like, those things are not mutually exclusive.
Shouldn't it actually be the opposite? Shouldn't you invest more if he wants to hold the ball longer?
Well, I think the notion is he's going to, even if you had like the Patriots offensive line, he'd be taking a lot of sacks.
No, I know that, but I'm just saying, like,
right,
they all used to joke about Peyton Manning, about how he gets rid of the ball so quickly that he'll make any alignment look
right,
good.
Yeah.
The opposite of that is someone who just takes a lot of sacks.
Scheme also.
He will make bad linemen look quite bad if you run around back there.
I mean, it's like the Indy thing, right? Like, what percentage of it is the offensive line being better and what percentage of it is just Frank Reich and scheme, right? It's a mix of
Ryan
all Grigson these things.
Addition by subtraction?
Before we finish talking about this crazy weekend, I want to ask you about Miami.
Mm.
Because
accidentally processing.
Miami, very excited for them to be given every award at Sloan next year. They'll have to make new awards.
New awards?
The whole panel is just going to be the entire
Brian Flores saying we're
Miami
not tanking.
Dolphins.
They're going to be going 0-16. They're going to have Tua. And Brian Flores will be like, well, we didn't tank.
Do you think this is an absolute win for them? Because
yes.
You do.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
So,
because the counter argument, and look, I'm mostly with you, but I think you could argue, one could argue that, hey, if you're tanking to get your young quarterback and, build around him into an element of that is you want to have an offensive line in place. the reason you draft and amass these picks is to get guys like Laremy Tunsil. Now, obviously, the difference is they would have to pay Laremy Tunsil, yeah. which is it's not like Laremy Tunsil in a vacuum. But there is an element of certainty versus draft picks.
Yeah. So I wrote a story a couple weeks ago about the Browns and basically how they got to this place where they had one of the best rosters on paper in football. And you cannot tell that story without the amount of draft picks they had. And even if you say, okay, well, they had a bunch of draft picks and a lot of them didn't hit. Well, I mean, Denzel Ward is important. He was the fourth pick they got from the aforementioned Houston Texans. Like, those are the luxuries you have when you have more picks. It's really incredible. And I think if you're gonna rebuild, the way to do that is just accumulate as many high picks as you can, take advantage of the rookie salary cap, and you don't need to put a timetable on it. You don't need to say, okay, we're going to give Laremy Tunsil a 4-year deal, get our quarterback next year. What if next year they want to trade out? What if they don't think, I don't know the answer to this, but what if they think two is not the prospect everyone else does? Maybe you can get two more first round picks. Maybe you can just control the 2021 draft and build your dynasty that way. I think, you know, they still have some questions. What do they do with Xavien Howard, who I think is really good? Do they keep him around during this tank? I don't know the answer to that. But I think that the solution here is to the Eagles do it, the Patriots do it, the Browns did it, the Jimmy Johnson Cowboys did it. Get a lot of picks and start building. Don't worry about anything else.
I think I agree with you. And I think I do, however, believe part of the reason the Browns were so well situated when Baker came in was that they were ready with that line, right? The offensive line was largely in place.
Which they've now taken a step back from.
A concern, but, now that to me doesn't mean that the Dolphins necessarily had to keep Laremy Tunsil, because with Laremy Tunsil, not only was there this opportunity cost of an incredible haul that they got for him, but also, as we've discussed, you'd have to pay him a ton of money. Now, potentially, they've got all these picks. They could go out and try to rebuild the line as they're taking in Tua, if that's the road they want to go down, and maybe do it at lesser cost. Because Laremy Tunsil, when you consider not only the cost of his contract, but also the cost of the picks that they were offered, if they're not taking those picks, would have been very expensive in that regard. Potentially now, they go in not only with a ton of picks, but also a ton of cap space.
Yeah.
They can build that line. I do believe, for me, I think it's really important if you're going to start that process with the young quarterback to focus on the offensive line.
Yeah, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is you have so many options.
Ammunition.
You have ammunition. You have the cap space to just overpay a left tackle.
Right,
if you'd like.
Without giving up these tickets that
you've
gotten.
The most valuable thing in football is an elite player on a rookie deal.
Right.
Laremy Tunsil is not going to be that after this year. So you have more chances than anybody going forward to find those elite players on rookie deals. I mean, and by the way, there's no guarantee that in 2 years the Texans are picking, 25.
Right, that is
if you catch my drift.
Yeah, absolutely. And just again, given the value for Laremy Tunsil, you gotta think they can find a left tackle some way, somehow, whether it's through the draft, through the trade, through free agency, whatever, that when you consider all of the factors, cost less. We'll see. I mean, I actually think if the value was not as high for him, this would be a different discussion, because I think they should have kept him and paid him. But the fact that they got so much in response to him changes the tenor of that. Look, we could talk about this for a long time. It's a meaty discussion. Speaking of meat, after hearing me talk about ButcherBox for months, if you haven't taken advantage of their amazing offers, you need to listen up. Every month, ButcherBox delivers humanely raised 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon directly to your door. Choose from 4 curated boxes or customize your own box with all of your favorite cuts. And with free shipping, ButcherBox makes getting high-quality meat with no added hormones or antibiotics easier than ever. ButcherBox has a ton of awesome recipes and resources on their website that'll help you bring out all of the favorite flavor of each cut or meat you get from ButcherBox. And this month, ButcherBox is offering new members $20 off your first box plus free ground beef for the life of your subscription when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Mina. That's right. In addition to all the great meat you get, ButcherBox is knocking $20 off of your first box and throwing in 2 pounds of free ground beef in every box for the life of your subscription when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Mina. ButcherBox.com/MINA.
Question. question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, if you leave a question in my iTunes review and it's a positive review, I'll answer it.
Does anyone ever negatively review and then ask a question?
Yeah, and I think it was an accident. It was like a really positive review, and then it was a one star. Yeah. But other than that, no one's tested my boundaries.
Your policy?
Yeah. I hope you'll help me with some of these questions, especially this first one is interesting. JRC9569 asks about a team we're going to talk about shortly in one of these games. Will Cam Newton play his entire career in Carolina?
Ooh, great question.
Yeah. Yes?
No.
Whoa!
Well, hold on. I just think careers are long.
Yes.
Okay? Careers are long. This is the age of the forever quarterback.
What percentage of, this would be an interest. Somebody must have done a study on this. Like, what percentage of top 15 quarterbacks move around?
Well, I mean, a lot of them. I think that Drew Brees moved around. It was a different situation.
Right, yeah.
But Drew Brees moved around. I think that you start. Yeah, look at the top quarterbacks. Obviously, Tom Brady stayed. Peyton Manning did not stay. Quarterbacks exist now in their current form from about age 23 to 40, something like that. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of contracts. The way we pay quarterbacks has changed dramatically and will continue to change. The way Cam Newton plays has changed and will continue to change. So I think there's every possibility that he signs one more deal in Carolina and then they kind of, 2023, figure out what's next.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really just depends on the quarterback and how long they're willing to play.
Right.
I mean, we got Roethlisberger, Pittsburgh obviously stayed, Rivers, Matt Ryan, just looking at the older guys. You know, we've got a lot of lifers.
But
Rodgers.
They haven't, but I mean, Rodgers will probably stay. Matt Ryan just signed the first $3 million deal. Will Cam Newton get that kind of deal?
That's the real question.
Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. Just signed 2 years. What's Cam Newton's 64?
Is he coming up?
He had actually a quite cheap contract.
I was gonna say it was the timing of it was a 5-year deal, and it looks like I'm just pulling up the contract right now on my computer. It's through 2020.
Yeah.
So let me spin this.
I think he gets one more deal. I think David Tepper doesn't want to rock the boat.
I don't either.
And he gives them one more deal, and then we'll see where we're at. I don't think he's gonna get. Top of the market. I mean,
he's 31.
Yeah,
we'll talk about him in this season because I think
it depends how. Yeah, it depends how he looks
season,
this year.
Yeah, right. And we'll talk about that because we're going to talk about that that game, which I think is a very good one. Dizzy Cow asks, which NFL player would be a best fit for Hollywood Handbook? He suggests Jay Cutler. It's a comedy podcast that I did. Jay Cutler is an amazing choice, Kevin. It's like a podcast where the guest is kind of like a straight man.
Yeah.
But has to roll with the punches. I feel like Rodgers would...
Aaron Rodgers. You wouldn't roll with the punches?
Yeah, but I feel like he'd really want to be
who the funny person was.
Yes, exactly. That's what
I had a nice conversation about 2 weeks ago. I talked about Ricky Gervais. He had so much respect for Ricky Gervais that I think he would just sit there for like 3 hours.
He
would just let the comedians do his
work. I think that's true. Yeah, that'd be a good choice. Baker would also enjoy it.
He's no longer an NFL player. Andrew Luck would be quite good.
He's got time.
He's got plenty of time.
A2L1U3.
Josh Norman, by the way.
I hope that's not like your license plate number, Josh Norman. Asks, okay, with Antonio Brown gone in Pittsburgh, who's going to break out target-wise? I mean, any of them. It's Pittsburgh.
Do you mean in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Aside from Juju, I assume. I don't
Deontay,
know.
Right? Washington.
Isn't there a Vance McDonald hype train?
I think we talked about last week, who would be the funniest player that Pittsburgh could turn into an elite wide receiver since they have so much skill in that regard on that roster.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's Stephon to it or something.
Yeah, yeah. They downplay their acumen at finding receivers. Talked to Kevin Colbert about this last month, and I was like, you guys are great at this. What do you look for? And he's like, well, nothing special. We've actually missed on a lot. It's like, you're not supposed to actually say that you're not very good at something. Vance McDonald, by the way, would be a great Hollywood Handbook guy. He's a big cereal. I remember talking to him about cereal. When it first came out, huge cereal.
Big pod guy. I like the idea of Ben Roethlisberger having been burned for being critical of his teammates. Mm-hmm. Now going like super far in the op and being like, Stephon Tuitt just runs a great route.
He just can no longer say a bad word about
only positive about everything.
Because he feels so bad about throwing Brown under the bus last year.
Zach Cook, too, asks, oh, this is a question for me, how old I was when I decided that I wanted to work in football. Well, I was 30.
Right.
having been a business journalist, I did not think, and yet I became a writer. I did not think that this was something I was going to be doing until later in my career. So there you go, kids. You can always change. B. Carver 007. It's like a serial killer kind of name.
They all are vaguely serial killer names.
Earlier in the year, let's just say people were leaving things that were funny for me to read without me knowing that they were racy.
Like a Ron Burgundy situation?
But like worse, yeah. There was an adult film reference that I didn't get, which I feel like is a testament to me, honestly, that I didn't. Asks, you can help me. This is the last question. The top five foods, if you could only eat them for the rest of your life. Okay, so obviously you should choose like broccoli, like you should choose staples. But let's throw out staples. Because I don't want to think practically.
Are we choosing like the restaurant too, or are we just choosing the food?
Yeah. You can do either. But I'm throwing out like, you know, bread, milk, that kind of stuff. Vegetables.
Jeez. You'd have to get... So we can't choose like filet mignon, or can we?
You can choose filet mignon.
Okay, I mean filet mignon's on the list. It's also portion control.
Filet mignon is actually pretty good for you.
Yeah.
If the calorie counts at Outback Steakhouse are correct.
Oh, it's probably not going to be Outback Steakhouse filet mignon. Geez. You'd want some, I think French onion soup is in there.
Really?
You got,
it's too rich
are
for
you
me.
Joking?
It's too rich for
French
me.
French onion soup might be number one.
Too much. I can't do it.
What?
Too rich.
Too rich.
Too rich. And then you look stupid eating it because you're like, when you break off the top part and it's kind of
Well, the weird thing
goopy.
is that after you eat all the cheese, you don't even want the soup anymore.
I know.
It's like a cake with frosting. You're just like, I'll just take the frosting.
It's the Texans rosters, the French onion soup.
The only specific one, there's a cornbread stack at a restaurant called the Floridian in St. Augustine that
What is a cornbread stack?
It's a stack of cornbread.
Okay.
I don't know how else to explain this. It doesn't get any deeper than
it's
that.
It's self-explanatory.
This is not complicated. It's just, it is. Mm. They have like six or seven cornbread-based dishes.
Mm.
And,
cornbread-based dishes.
You're gonna want them.
I think for me it's always-
All my five might just be the five different cornbread dishes.
Have you ever been to Zetejas in Arizona?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it is a, it's like a, little bit above Outback, maybe, in terms of like the restaurant.
Okay.
It's a chain.
Okay.
But it's only in the American Southwest. And it's amazing. It's Tex-Mex. My family's obsessed with it. My dad owns a Zetejas pin. Okay. Oh. And the founder is Nick Foles' dad.
What?
Yes.
That's amazing.
It's like my favorite fun fact. It's awesome. It really makes me like Nick Foles so much more than I should. Because I have such fond memories of eating a Zetejas. Prickly pear margarita.
So Nick Foles
delicious.
Is loaded.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
He's as loaded as the nachos at Zetejas.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't give you my five foods, so I'll just throw that out. They have an amazing cornbread dish there as well. When I was a kid, I loved Bloomin' Onions.
There's just a lot more Outback takes than I thought on this spot.
I love like a good loaded baked potato.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what's really good? Like the Katsuya, the crispy fried rice with the tuna on it.
Okay. I also could use like one of those nice cones of French fries.
Oh, I love those.
What's the place everybody goes to when they're drunk in New York?
Oh,
the
pom frites.
Yeah.
On Second Avenue.
I could do that. I don't even like have it that much, but if you're just shaving it down to five things for the rest of your life.
I really like poke bowls because I've convinced myself they're healthy, even though they're obviously not. Like anything tastes good and is not healthy. But I think everyone in California is like, yeah, poke bowls, they're diet food. And they're not at all. It's like oily fish with like avocado and like mayonnaise.
People conflate like healthy and organic for diet food out here.
I'm so hungry right now.
Me too. We're having lunch after this.
Before we get back to the games, if you're listening to this you probably like podcasts, or maybe you just like mine. That's cool. But I want to tell you about another podcast. The Ringer NFL Show is one that you should definitely check out. But you should also check out a podcast we've got at ESPN. Look, college football is celebrating its 150th anniversary. We have a podcast that takes you back to some of the most iconic moments in the sport, such as Jimmy Johnson transforming college football with style, the fall of USC, how Michael Vick electrified on the field, and many other stories you can check out on the Down and Distance podcast hosted by Ivan Mizell. All right, so the first game, I want to talk about two games with you. So four teams, really. And the first game, and I think both of these games have teams that are not only playoff contenders, but I actually think could win the Super Bowl. I think. The first game has a team that's probably a favorite and a team that's not. Do you know which one I'm gonna?
Are you talking about the Patriots and the Steelers?
No, I want to talk about the Rams and the Panthers.
Oh, okay.
I actually think they're probably situated similarly, right? Like the Rams and the Patriots are probably seen in that same upper tier, and the Panthers and the Steelers are about, you could have gone either way. Right. So I think this Rams-Panthers game is really fascinating because the Rams' schedule is really difficult to open. Mm-hmm. They've got the Panthers, the Saints at home, which is going to be electric. And then the Browns. Like, there is a world in which the Rams go 1-2 and everybody's freaking out about Sean McVay's preseason strategy. I do not want to live in that world.
They should call for his firing to be replaced by another guy who knows Sean McVay.
Let's talk about this game.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. Number one, did you see Lindsay Theory's story about McVay's compass today?
I saw the picture. I haven't clicked on... I didn't see the compass anywhere. I was around, obviously, the team a lot.
He made a compass.
I didn't see this compass.
He made a compass.
I think there was a pyramid last year or something. Or there was some sort of...
Well, he made a compass for the direction the team has to go in after the Super Bowl loss.
Let's talk about it.
He is moving... As Don Draper said, he moves one direction and it's forward. And now he has a compass to prove it. Don Draper did not actually have a compass.
Let me look at this compass.
It looks a little bit like I'm... I don't even know. It looks like a Jimmy Buffett album cover. Like it's like that kind of compass.
I got the compass.
It's very nautical, as compasses tend to be.
It kind of looks. It looks like a Mariners T-shirt.
It looks like it maybe.
It looks like
a Tommy
Mariners
Bahama
t-shirt.
Like $90
because it's like blue and yellow.
Everybody
and
in
relentless,
Florida
mentally tough, connected, consistent. We not me.
Compasses rarely have that much information. They typically just tell you what direction you're going in. This is a long way to say
I've never used a compass. This generation of children
will never need to use a compass. That's true. I don't know if I've used a compass. Probably. I mean like a real, like hold it in your hand. Like I've had them on me, but I haven't actually used it. I have a pretty good sense of direction. Now, this is a long way of saying that Super Bowl hangover is very, very real. And it relates to the team they're playing because I had a long conversation with Ron Rivera last month. And I brought up the Super Bowl. And I'm sorry, maybe he brought up the Super Bowl. It's not important. But he talked a lot about it. Like maybe I love Ron Rivera. But he talked a lot more than maybe I was interested in about the Super Bowl. Like he kept going on about specific
his
Super Bowl, yeah. And the one that he lost to Denver. And, you know, the fumbled special teams play, all that stuff. And he went on and on and on. And you get similar vibes from Atlanta, where sometimes they go into a dark place and they start talking about the second half of that Super Bowl. And I don't think we think enough about how much that really kills you to lose a Super Bowl. And Sean McVay's done a lot of stories. He did the Andy Benoit story where he was like, I screwed up the Super Bowl. He's talked about it with a couple other people. But I think that the ability to bounce back from the Super Bowl and hit the ground running is really, really, really hard. Only the Patriots apparently can do it. And that's just because
the Patriots were the first team to do it since 1972.
Right. They also,
the 1972 Dolphins were literally the last team to do that, to come back and win.
They are a little less emotional than most teams in the NFL.
Really?
We'll leave it at that. And so I think that I'm fascinated to see how the Rams operate this year. Fascinated. I thought there was a bookie that released some numbers on how much each quarterback would affect a team's win-loss over-under if they got injured. And Jared Goff was 5 wins.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that a little high?
I mean,
I guess that's a board. That's a statement about
Blake
Bortles.
I was going to say, yeah. Blake, they probably have one of the better backup situations in the NFL.
Excuse me?
I mean it. Look around the NFL. Look at the backups. Who's Jacoby Brissett's back? Oh, no, it's Hoyer.
It's Brian Hoyer.
let me rephrase that. There was a game, by the way, in the preseason. It was McVay sat Bortles in mm-hmm. game three. And I was like, oh no, no Blake Bortles. And I had this like weird moment, like what if I had like foreseen myself typing those words mm-hmm. going into a football game a year ago. But they have the better backup situation, one of the better backup situations in the NFL, in that while I understand they're very, since they do not like the system quarterback thing, Sean McVay undeniably makes quarterbacks' lives a lot easier. He makes every person on the offense their lives easier. He makes Todd Gurley's life a lot easier. He makes the offensive line's life easier. He makes those wide receivers' lives easier. And that, to me, Kevin, is what I'm most interested in going into the season, and I think is going to be revealed very quickly because it's a very, very challenging front seven, which we'll talk about, they're facing. Does he change any of that? Does he have to? Should he? Is there a possibility that there's an overreaction? Because, you know, we talk about teams so much through the lens, I think, of their last game. And I think, like, Deshaun Watson being a great example. Everyone has kind of a bad taste in their mouth about him from that playoff game,
yeah.
even though there are many, many reasons why he struggled, even though he had this incredible comeback season. When talking about the Rams and the Super Bowl, and you and I can talk about that, I don't want to say people forget how, like, this offense.
The Rams are the new Titans?
People forget. This offense was unstoppable.
Yeah.
So is there, like, if you're, like, do you think anything about it should be changed going into the season?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I was silent that entire time because I wanted to see, it's almost like a Levitard does with Greg Cody, where I just wanted to see you spin yourself out of the Blake Bortles is good thing. And you acquitted yourself quite well.
I thought I was steering, I had a compass.
If I was doing my own podcast, I would have stopped midway through and been like, guys, just cut this whole thing. I'm sorry. I regret getting down this hole. You acquitted yourself quite well. Now,
he's high variance.
I think that
he's been good.
There's a couple of thoughts that I have on McVay's offense. The first is that I'm intrigued to see how defenses change as this offense proliferates.
Right.
And that now there's six or seven teams that are running this offense. I think there's certain things like play action that will always work. We've seen that. I don't know if you saw the Albert Breer story. Basically, the Sean McVay says that I do nothing new. We basically do the same thing that Andy Reid did and Kyle Shanahan did and Mike Shanahan did, which is in large part true. He basically said the narrative out there is that he himself is running this revolution, but McVay himself says it's not. There's no revolution. It's just a bunch of good coaches, right? I'm intrigued to see how defenses prepare for this offense after
yes.
seeing what Belichick could do.
So, and me too. And well, first, okay, and I think Carolina is uniquely situated
yes.
to do that, and that's why this game is so fascinating to me.
Yes.
So we should talk
great
about what
seven.
Belichick did. So down the stretch, the Rams offense struggled
mm-hmm.
against the Bears, against the Eagles, some of the better defenses in the NFL. So, I think the Patriots deserve and have received a ton of credit for their game plan against the offense, but you saw flashes of that actually near the end of the season. You saw line, so we know the Rams offense, their formula is well established. 11, ton of play action. Basically, you've got, you know, your three wide receivers, your tight end, and your running backs, and they all do the same stuff. So and there's always a run action. So at any point, it's like positionless basketball. Any of these players could do something different, right? And there's a lot, obviously, an element of deception that comes with that because you come out with the same, you put on your same face and I don't know where I was going with that analogy. And then you make a creepy expression or a smile. You get the idea. Down the stretch, and again,
it's like I go come back to this. Orlovsky said this to me 8 months ago, and I think about
the
it all the time.
Thing.
The suit thing.
Yeah, the suit thing.
Blue suit. Everybody's got the same blue suit. McVay adds a pocket square.
You don't like my face. It's the same face. That could give you a creepy expression. A smile.
Yeah.
A wink.
That's,
anyways, so Belichick comes out and he says, all right.
Normal analogy.
We're just gonna, you know, put six guys on the line,
yeah.
and we're gonna do a bunch
yeah.
of different stuff with them.
Yeah.
Sometimes, Don, you know, Kyle Van Noy's gonna rush. Sometimes we're gonna stunt. Sometimes he's gonna drop mm-hmm. back. And by the way, Dante Hightower is not gonna bite on play action. So we're gonna have a line. So we're gonna have extreme discipline against play action with our linebacker. And meanwhile, we're gonna have this very condensed front. Okay. So that, just to talk about now, going into this game and defenses around the... Oh, and by the way, we're going to use a lot of deception in the backfield as well, which not that easy to execute.
And we're going to have McCourty cover 40 yards on one play in about half a second.
So as we start explaining all the things you have to do, it's not easy, okay? Now, when I think back to that Super Bowl and the way the Rams could have countered that, like, how do you counter what we just described, right? Which is this combination of... Got a bunch of guys on the line, this linebacker is not biting on play action necessarily, and this secondary that's switching coverages. Well, you got to have a quick passing game, which they didn't really have. No. Oh, wait, they have Darrell Henderson now. Oh. I don't know. I think we're going to get a lot of these answers pretty early on.
Right. Yeah, and it reminds me a little bit a couple years ago of every maybe 4 years, there's this thing where the Patriots lose a Super Bowl, and it's like, well... The way to beat Tom Brady is to get a four-man rush.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who? Yeah, I know. Like, we know. They do pull 31 other coaches. Yeah, getting a four-man rush on Tom Brady is really important. That's hard to do. Four-man rushes are what every single team tries to do. It's like, it's just so simplistic. And so, yes, holding the Rams to 3 points is what you want to do, but it's not that easy. There's so many intricate things that the Patriots did, as you detailed there. The Panthers have a really good front seven. I'm really intrigued to see how someone like Gerald McCoy fits in. I think he's still got something left in the tank. Brian Burns, I'm really excited to see over the course of a season. So I think that there's a lot of possibilities here. I agree with you that these are two intriguing NFC teams that might have potential to play in the NFC Championship game at some point if everything breaks right for them, or, you know, with the Rams, if Henderson breaks for them, that kind of thing. And so I don't necessarily know what game plan they'll do, because I think McVay is going to have enough wrinkles to where he's not just going to run what they ran in the Super Bowl. I think there will be some changes.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of talk in this offseason about, maybe we'll see a little more 12.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The reports came out basically that in training camp he was running more 12 personnel.
Yeah, and we'll see. I think with Henderson, too, there's this – maybe they'll run heavier sets. Maybe they'll have them both on the field. Yeah. Maybe, like I just said,
Gurley,
maybe they'll use
Henderson?
Them in the quick passing. Yeah, Gurley and Henderson. Maybe they'll use them in the quick passing game. I don't know. I think there's the potential for a lot. But I think a lot of this is game to game. Like, I think it's not like the Rams have to change. To go back to kind of what we were talking about with regards to the Patriots and what they did and how difficult it is for defense to do that, it's going to depend on the defenses. I think if McVay could do it all over, he would have done it differently against the Patriots and perhaps the Bears, you know, but most teams are not the Patriots and the Bears. I think the reason, I guess the genius of Bill Belichick is the game-to-game changes, not necessarily, that sort of flexibility. I think on the other side of the ball, that the Rams' defense has the potential to be a lot better this year. I did not see... Yeah. Oh, your brow's furrowing.
I'm assembling their depth chart in my mind.
Okay. So the changes.
It's like the world's worst version of Sherlock. I'm just trying to figure out who's on the Rams depth chart.
As a, the second cousin in the Ramley, thanks for not giving me trouble about this, by the way. I just am constantly being dragged by Seahawks.
It was a great opportunity for you.
Tell Danger Russ Wilson, please.
I would never begrudge someone for taking a great opportunity.
I think that so part of the reason I'm so high on the Panthers is not just because of the front seven, but because of what we saw out of Cam Newton in the beginning of last season. I think this offensive line has the potential to be a lot better. Mm-hmm. I think DJ Moore could take another step forward. I think they could figure out how to use Curtis Samuel better. I like this offense. I was completely owned by Norv Turner last year.
Me too.
Yeah, we all were, right?
Yeah.
Most of us.
He was the Daniel Jones offensive coordinator.
Now on the Rams side of the ball, you know, they lost Sue, who really didn't do a ton until the playoffs last year. Anyways,
they were excited.
To
do something different.
They've got a new. Oh, by the way, I should have mentioned with the Rams, they do have two new stars on the offensive line, which I actually think could be a benefit based on how the inside of that line looked at the end of last season.
Eric Weddle on defense.
So on defense, you've got Eric Weddle. You've got Clay Matthews on the outside, who, you know, is not what he used to be as a pass rusher, but could add something there. And then they drafted Greg Gaines and Taylor Rapp, both of whom you'll see situationally. I will say this. The Rams have not had an outside pass rush since Robert Quinn. It's literally Aaron Donald and I think off the top of my head, they get 15%.
Dante Fowler produced
a little bit at the end, but I think that's the X factor because they are super high. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't see
I was
him
way
the...
down on Dante Fowler when the trade
Me too.
Happened.
Me too.
But I get the lesson of those sort of trades. I was also super down on Eli Apple.
Yeah.
But you put a guy in the right situation and, you know, smart teams can figure that out. What do both the Rams and the Saints have in common? They know what roles these guys need to play.
I think they're going to get more of an outside pass rush, which has been non-existent. I'm still concerned about the run defense, which was not good. No. Los Angeles.
But also that
maybe
that,
doesn't matter
that's
that
kind
much.
Of league-wide.
Well, that, maybe like, it doesn't matter
the
now.
Four, like, all four teams in the conference championship had really bad run defense
and
last
it,
year.
And it doesn't cost you games in the NFL anymore. That's the thing about the Super Bowl. Like, the Rams didn't lose because of the Patriots' running backs. They lost because Tom Brady had one good drive.
Mm-hmm.
And their offense didn't meet it. Yeah. Literally one catch. I mean, that's the funny thing about the NFL, right? It comes down to, like, a single play like that. But in any case.
Game of inches, Mina.
They've got Christian McCaffrey. And they did lose it during the preseason. The one starter who played was the linebacker, who Micah Kizer, who they wanted to stop the run. So he's out. So I still think the Rams are going to win this game, but I think it's going to be real close.
Okay, let me ask you a question. And you don't you have special insight, but if you don't want to answer, you don't have to. Is there any chance that the Rams just take a huge step back and implode this year?
So for that to happen, I don't think that's going to happen. Before that to happen, you know, like thinking through what would that entail necessarily, I think you'd still have to have no outside pass rush. Marcus Peters would have to revert to the bad Marcus Peters last season before he became good again once Tlaib came back and they switched to more of his own. So you'd have to go back to having like a sub average, you'd have to have like a below average defense. And then I think that the offensive line, I will say this, the offensive line is thin. They did draft two guys who were tackles and they like one of them I thought looked pretty good in the preseason. But if one of those guards goes down, there could be, especially again, because of the nature of the, like, as much play action that they run, it helps their offensive line and Gurley a lot. But if they lose one of them, Jared Goff is significantly worse under pressure. Now, all quarterbacks are significantly worse under pressure, but he is unique, I think, materially, like, much, much worse.
It looked, the Bears game where he was under assault, it looked like in the second half of that game that it looked like he was replaced by like a normal person out of the stands.
2016 Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Well, who was a normal person out
who
of the stands?
Who was a normal person? Because Jeff Fisher.
All right, pick a winner, and then let's move on to the next game.
Rams.
Steelers-Patriots.
Close though.
I'm really excited about this game as well. I feel like at the beginning of the offseason, everybody was all in on the Browns, and it feels like, just based on my compass of sentiment. that's more of a barometer. That's someone who doesn't know what compasses do, using the word incorrectly. It feels like the Steelers are getting a lot of heat. Like, I feel like over the last few weeks, suddenly people are buying into Pittsburgh. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh's still going to win the division.
You do?
Yeah, I think the Browns are going to wild card. I think the Steelers
think
are pretty good.
Both wild card teams could come out of the AFC North easily.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I actually forget who I did in the ringer picks, but I know I picked the Browns to make a wild card and the Steelers to win the division. I think that the Steelers still have a lot of roster talent. I think Devin Bush can be a really good player. You know, it's interesting to me. I talked to their GM last month, and he was saying that they drafted Ryan Shazier a couple years ago, they basically saw that the game was going horizontal instead of vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed sort of a sideline to sideline guy.
Yeah.
And obviously, once Ryan Shazier gets that career-ending injury, they didn't have that for a couple years. So now Devin Bush can play that sort of game. He can cover a lot of ground. I'm not saying in any way he's a replacement for Ryan Shazier. They do different things. But what I'm saying is that they need that sort of urgent athleticism.
Urgent athleticism.
Yeah. That's a big
As opposed
football.
To lazy athleticism.
Or no athleticism, like Jarvis Jones, who they drafted a couple years ago, who showed no athleticism, and they let him go. There's a lot of no athleticism around the NFL.
I'm with you on Bush, even though when Greg Rosenthal was on a couple weeks ago, I joked about how I looked up the reactions to Bush's first preseason game, and a Pittsburgh writer compared him to Bobby Wagner. So that's where we are. But no, I mean, the amount of talent now in the front
Mark
seven
Barron,
is really impressive.
Speaking of more athleticism.
Mark Barron, I think they're going to, I mean, I've always liked this defensive line. I think TJ Watt took a real step forward last year. So yeah, it's
athletic,
huge.
Athleticism.
A lot of athleticism.
There's a lot of urgent athleticism.
Is his athleticism urgent or sneaky? Can you be sneaky if you're a Watt brother, though? I know,
yeah,
I understand,
no, I was
like,
say,
you're fighting a lot of
Yeah,
lot
I
of
think
issues.
The Watts have not been sneaky for a long time. They're urgent.
I'm not worried about, so the one thing where I did, I guess, clash with Greg, he was much more confident about the secondary and the DBs than me. But I think because this front seven could be good enough to compensate for that. I am not worried about the offense. Ben Roethlisberger had a really weird season last year. Like,
he led the
statistically,
NFL in passing yards.
And interceptions.
He was on one.
He's always on one.
Yeah.
He
was just doing stuff. Whether he was getting yards or throwing interceptions, he was doing something always.
I think that there's no universe in which not having Antonio Brown helps your team. But I think one possible silver lining is it probably means Ben Roethlisberger is going to throw fewer interceptions because he will stop throwing YOLO balls to Antonio Brown. That's the one positive outcome.
I talked to the offensive coordinator about this. He had a couple of things to say. Number one, he said he said almost exactly what you said, which is there's no way to say that Antonio Brown is addition by subtraction. That cannot happen. Antonio Brown is a really talented player. However, there's two things to unpack. Number one is that Ben Roethlisberger will not have to force the ball there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
he didn't have to, but he just did.
I mean, he kind of did. there's a lot there. And then the other thing is, they don't know what the offense is going to look like yet because they don't know how teams are going to play them. Antonio Brown was unique in that, teams would sell out to stop him. And that kind of gets into the forcing the balls thing there. They don't know how defenses will play them with Juju. Will they do the same thing? They compare Juju to Hines Ward a little bit, put him in a little Hines Ward role.
Mm.
And they don't know how teams, for instance, he brought this up, how will teams play Vance McDonald this year when there's no Antonio Brown on the field? They don't know, so it's hard to say here's the exact scheme we're going to be able to run this year.
That's interesting. I'm curious about that. I'm curious about if Ben's style evolves at all. I'm curious about...
I don't know. I don't think his style will evolve that much.
If he protects the ball better. Because he cost them games last year. Not only did he throw a ton of picks, he threw them at extremely inopportune moments, which is why he had a weird season. Even despite being a very good quarterback by most other measures, both traditional and not. I'm curious to see if this offensive line looks different at all without Mike Munchak. I don't think they will if they're purely healthy, right? Because they're all guys that he's coached. There's a ton of continuity. But I do think if they're older, if any of them goes down, that's where you start feeling the absence of your offensive line coach and needing to integrate someone. So I think there's potential there. In this game in particular, Kevin, we talked about how defenses will play the Pittsburgh offense. I'm curious to see how this Pittsburgh defense that we just praised their front seven, how they handle the Patriots. Now, because I've mentioned, I think this Patriots offense is going to look very different from last year, not just in terms of the personnel, but in terms of scheme. And so I'm not sure, let's just call it what it is. Bill Belichick has pantsed this team repeatedly. And I am curious to see if the fact that they have better talent changes their approach at all.
Great question. So I'm intrigued with the Patriots offense in general because I think that...
What are they going to look like?
Right. So one of the things that intrigues me about it specifically is that there's nothing more exciting than Bill Belichick having to come up with something, being forced to come up with something, whether that's Julian Edelman and Troy Brown playing defensive back. Remember when Jacoby Brissett was the starter against the Texans and he just dunked all over them? That was amazing. And Mike Vrabel's playing tight end. Okay, sure, whatever. And those are the kind of things that come out of a desperate Belichick situation. So they'll have Josh Gordon. When he returns to full go, I guess remains to be seen.
Is he playing week one?
I don't know. He didn't play in the preseason much.
Yeah.
I actually haven't seen anything. N'Keal Harry's on IR to start the season. Jacoby Myers, the hype train there is just unbelievable.
Oh, I've, yeah.
I was getting a lot. When I was in Detroit for the joint practice, and I was not there to see the Patriots. I was there working on something in Detroit. And I was getting a lot of texts from Bill Simmons asking how Jacoby Myers looked. It's like, not how does Tom Brady look? Doesn't care. How does N'Keal Harry look? Doesn't care. What's up with Jacoby Myers?
Okay.
So the hype train there is going on. I think that there will be probably a little more focus on the heavy stuff. I wouldn't be surprised to see
early.
A little more James Devlin just beat some people up. A little harder in this situation to do that because the front seven with the Steelers is better than their secondary. But I would not be surprised to see some real cool innovation this year from Bill Belichick, Josh Daniels.
I think an important factor when thinking through the run game, how this offense might come out looking at first, David Andrews.
Yep.
Center is also on the injured reserve.
Yep. They swung a trade and, it'll be, I think that, any injury to the line, or, you know, David Andrews is a real potentially long-term health injury. It's not necessarily kind of like a sprained ankle. So that'll be interesting to watch, and obviously all the best to him. But when you start thinking about a interior line injury this early, and if they're really trying to go heavy, if they're going to try to do more with the backs this year, that could be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is going to be a defensive, like the identity of this team, mm-hmm. especially early on, is going to be the defense. A defense that I think is really good.
Yeah.
I think their secondary is elite. I need a new adjective that's elite, but not elite. Not generational.
I've got one. What about special? Okay. I feel like we've cycled out on special.
I like special because special, you can, after the fact, like say it, you meant something different.
Or just like unique.
I want it to have a positive connotation.
No. I know what you mean, but I'm just saying, like, you can, if the secondary gets torched in week one, it's like, well, I said they were special. I didn't say they were good.
I think it's a special secondary.
There you go.
I think that you talked about Bill Belichick and his creativity when he's, like, Bill Belichick is the guy on Survivor who turns a eucalyptus leaf into a knife. I don't know why he would need a knife. Maybe to build a shack. In any case, the eucalyptus leaf is Kyle Van Noy. I at this point, I don't care about who's on the path. I don't care who's in the front seven. It'll be fine.
It'll be completely normal. Either Jeff Howell from Athletic did a story today on, you basically got a bunch of coaches to talk about why the Patriots win. I thought it was a great story, but you got Saban and these guys. And one of the things, Joe Philbin, remember Joe Philbin? Mm. Old Joey Philbin. He's got some thoughts on losing to Bill Belichick. And he said the turnover rate is really special. And Jeff Howell in the next paragraph said, since they got Tom Brady, do you know what their turnover rate is? Their plus minus?
Yeah.
It's plus 187, which is 100 more than anybody else in football. What are we doing?
Here's the other thing about the Patriots.
They're going to win the Super Bowl?
They don't really care about this game. Like,
why?
I mean,
because they're just going to win.
Well, no, but you know, I mean, let me rephrase that. I just talked about how they're able to, you know, gin up a pass rush out of like a pile of straw and some goat poop. They didn't have a pass rush during the regular season last year.
Right.
So that's kind of an inaccurate statement, what I just said. Like, it was like a completely different animal during the postseason. So it is entirely possible that it doesn't look great at the beginning of the year. But, you know, LOL, nothing matters.
I think that Seattle and New England have done a really good job proving that September just does not matter.
Right.
Remember those Legion of Boom teams where they would just start like 2-2 and you'd be like, what's wrong with Seattle?
Yeah.
And then they would just be 13-3 and get to the NFC Championship game.
That's kind of why I think Pittsburgh might win this.
Yeah, maybe.
It's, I don't know what the line is.
They lost some, the Patriots lost some weird games last year. They got destroyed by Detroit, if you remember that.
Yeah, but that's a, you know.
They lost the Titans, didn't they?
Yeah.
Why do we always forget it? The Titans play in a great city. They have allegedly, you know, on paper, an exciting quarterback. Do the Titans need to rebrand? Is that the problem?
Those are Belichick's guys, though, too. You know.
Oh, he was tanking?
No. The Titans thing is a separate conversation. I would not be surprised if New England loses this game.
Yeah, I would not be.
And
there.
I also would not be surprised if it doesn't matter at all.
I think,
although I do think...
I bet the Patriots win. At home, raising the banner.
I will say, we'll throw this out. Yeah, at home. With Kansas City, I think being, you and I talked about earlier, and wrap it up here, sort of being Kansas City and New England are kind of obviously in a separate tier from the other teams in the AFC. Mm-hmm. I do think that might matter. Like, this is all, these early games, yes, New England doesn't care about the beginning of the season, and I do think that Kansas City getting the number one seed could potentially have ramifications down there.
What they did last year.
It's time to celebrate. Football is finally back. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, has huge week one contests. It might not matter to Bill Belichick, but they matter to the rest of us. The first one starts this Thursday night when Chicago and Green Bay kick off the season in a single-game showdown with $2.5 million in total prizes up for grabs. Draft your single-game showdown lineup and feel the sweat like never before. It's simple. Just draft six players from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings using code MINA will receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize. Nothing adds the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Get in on season opener action, download the DraftKings app now, and use code MINA, M-I-N-A. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. And new users do not miss this extra special week one bonus. Enter my code MINA to get a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. That's code M-I-N-A only at DraftKings. Make it rain! Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All right. You know, I'm gonna ask a question about a game that we would have discussed if not for Bill O'Brien. Who's gonna win the opener? Bears or Packers?
Packers.
I pick the Packers too. I'm really high on them.
I think the Packers defense is better than we think.
Also, the Adrian Amos revenge game. Hmm. I love a good revenge
game.
What
about the HaHa Clinton Dix revenge game? That doesn't work at anything.
Question two.
He's a Magic fan.
Andrew Luck retired.
He did.
You have written a lot of my favorite stories by Andrew Luck over the years. So I think you have some insight into his brain. What is the weirdest, most believable job you could see Andrew Luck doing?
I don't think architect and that genre is that weird because that's was his.
He studied architect. Yeah.
I would not be surprised. I'm sorry. I don't know why I started my sentence like that because I'm about to say something completely ridiculous. He loves historical fiction. Bernard Cornwell and those guys.
Yeah.
And I could see him just taking a crack at it.
At writing historical fiction?
Yeah. Just like
sexy historical fiction?
I mean, that's up to him how he wants to take that. But I think that he could write sexy historical fiction. What I'm saying is he has the capacity to write sexy historical fiction, but whether or not how sexy he wants to make it. I mean, he's out of the NFL now. It's a judgment free zone.
Doesn't matter.
It's just a judgment free zone.
Yeah.
I think he's really into like the Napoleonic Wars and stuff. So like,
A lot of those books are even like the serious ones do have sexy elements.
What I don't really read it. What about the Napoleonic Wars is sexy?
Question three. Do you watch the show Succession?
I do.
Who's your favorite Succession character?
Well, it's easy to say Cousin Greg, right?
That's the gimme.
Right, that's why I'm not going to say him. I actually, after the Boar on the Floor debacle, I'm all in on Logan.
Logan, yeah, that episode, he really crushed it. I'm really into Tom.
Yeah,
I think it's so hard to make a character that's despicable yet utterly entertaining, and like I'm so excited.
The interplay between Tom and Greg is just unbelievable.
The interplay between Tom and Shiv makes me sad because it reminds me of like real life couples I've been around. But
that's grim.
Listen, Dinks and Dunks. You never know what you're going to get. By the way, it would be ironic if Andrew Luck
writing historical fiction about a prospect who had an offensive line early.
No. I was just about to say, if he ended up writing historical fiction, sexy or not, it would be funny because of the whole Captain Andrew Luck thing, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Which I am, I want to just plant my flag. I am anti. I have never enjoyed, I don't enjoy parody accounts on Twitter generally ever. Did you see after?
He took a victory lap.
Not only did he take a way too long, there were like 20 victory lap tweets, but then there were other, like a Captain Dak Prescott sprouted up.
We did Lieutenant Jacoby Brissett or something. The whole thing. We need to have
a national conversation.
We need to have a national conversation about unfunny Twitter accounts, starting with mine, certainly, but definitely those.
By the way, speaking of your Twitter account and you in general,
there we go. Great.
I forgot. I meant to open the show by saying I'm sorry about the news about Nathan Peterman. I know that.
Yeah,
that
well, at least he still has a job.
True.
Which I think that's, you know, we all wake up saying that. But the Peterman thing, it was really amazing to me because it's clear. I kind of figured out early that Gruden was doing this because he wanted to resurrect Nathan Peterman, not because it was good for the Raiders, but because it would help him as a quarterback guru.
Totally.
And that's what I wrote. I was just kind of like, this is a redemption story for both of them. Gruden wants to resurrect Peterman. Peterman wants to be resurrected. And I think that he's going to keep forcing that issue until he absolutely can stop forcing that issue. Until Nathan Peterman is the starter for the Oakland Raiders.
I'm trying, what is like an analogy for that? I guess Frankenstein is the only... Peterman being Frankenstein, yeah. Or the monster.
Gruden is
common
Frankenstein.
Misconception.
Gruden is Dr.
Frankenstein. Is the scientist, not the monster.
I mean, there's certainly a lot of historical precedents for people just forcing people onto. I mean, there's
Pygmalion.
Yeah, everybody wants to change somebody into their perfect vision of a quarterback.
Question four. Speaking of Gruden. So there's rules for which teams can be in Hard Knocks. You guys know it's a small group that's eligible every season. Most teams can get out of it. Throw aside the rules. If you could make any team in the NFL do Hard Knocks, who would you choose?
Well, it would have been the Raiders, and they actually didn't bring it as much
it
as I thought they
great.
Were going to.
It wasn't
I think
great.
You needed more access with Antonio Brown when he was just doing his weird helmet debacle.
I think that kind of invites the question of like what makes for a good Hard
sure.
Knocks. You have to have, I believe, a coach
yeah.
like Rex Ryan.
I have a take on this. So there is a Netflix did a Formula One documentary, and they embedded themselves in almost every team, and they just made each episode
into this. Formula One.
Well, okay, but this is not. I'm not going to go on a Formula One like rant here.
This doesn't sound like something I'd want to watch.
No, it is good. It's really good. And so, but they just basically like the way that they were embedded with every team. If one team was boring, they would just not include them. And so you ended up with the most exciting thing of each week. Okay,
yes, okay.
And so and they put it all at once.
So they have to hedge their bet. Yeah.
I told the NFL. I talked to someone at the NFL. Someone high at the NFL. And I was like, you guys, you should watch this. And I watched it. And then they were like, it's good. And I was like, you should do all 32 teams of Hard Knocks and just have a different show each week.
Yeah.
So you do the Antonio Brown debacle for one
for
episode
sure.
or whatever. And they were like, no, the actual answer is to just have All or Nothing released each week during the season.
But it would be different then.
It would be completely different. Yeah. But I think that'd be really interesting. Is if you started to... No team will do it.
No team will do this,
They've thought about this, but no team will have real-time stuff coming through
absolutely
facility
not.
Every Monday.
Absolutely
but
not.
But eventually they'll just tell them, you have to do it.
I liked how that... Your explanation began with, I told the NFL before you said it was a person.
I do
because
a lot
in my
of,
mind when you said that, it was
I
you
emailed
like,
NFL
writing,
at NFL.com.
writing like to their standard email box response. I think you're right. It would never happen, but that is the way to get the best content, undoubtedly.
But eventually the money is going to become so good.
Yeah. Well, you know, my take is with this whole preseason thing is that they should just at some point start televising joint practices because they're by far the most entertaining. They're significantly more entertaining than preseason games.
Yes, I agree.
I'll tell the NFL. Last question, as always.
The comment
comes from Letty.
Yeah.
Look, I have no control over what he asks, my guess. So, you know. He wants to know if you still think Andy Dalton is better than Aaron Rodgers.
Well, you know, it's a great question. Ben Baldwin of Seahawks Twitter fame.
Who gets mentioned on this podcast way more than he really should.
Well, he put out a statistical analysis the other day.
Oh, God. Do not.
That basically said that they...
No.
That over the past 3 years, they're fairly similar players. I think from a... talent standpoint, I think Aaron Rodgers has a lot more, but I think Aaron Rodgers' production has not been particularly good.
Wow.
The past couple of years.
We're going to use that as the teaser for this podcast. It's going to be on.
Please don't. And I really like Aaron Rodgers as a person.
Walk it back.
And as a player, but I do not consider him at present an elite quarterback.
Who are the elite quarterbacks?
Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. Elite of the elite. Drew Brees. Put Philip Rivers in there, right? Shouldn't we?
This is a whole other conversation. Like, I'm very curious to see what Brees and Rivers look like out the gate after the end of last season. But yeah, I would put him in there.
I don't want to do a full list here. I think there's a, it comes down to like, is a Matt Ryan elite? He had really good offensive numbers last year. The team just had injuries all around.
No, I'm Matt Ryan Hive. I've planted my flag.
I know.
Here.
But is he like, do you put him on the pedestal with Mahomes?
No. Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Isn't the elite just Patrick Mahomes and then Tom Brady?
It's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So Kevin Clark thinks Aaron Rodgers is washed.
That's you. You're saying that. You're trying to get me to say that so then you can quote tweet it and say interesting thoughts here.